From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
'Tis the season to be silly. And if you're looking for help for buying a gift for that gamer in your life, well, look no further, because The Dice Men Cometh are here to stuff your sack, stuff your turkey.
Yep.
Stuff your ears with ideas for gifts,
mm-hmm.
and stuff your liquor cabinet at the end of the night.
Woohoo!
Hi, guys.
Oh, hello, Trent.
It's a show about board games and card games once again on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent.
I'm Garth.
And I'm Mark. And coming up on tonight's show, Garth.
Yes.
Which
is
episode.
I wrote it down. Number 144.
Yes.
Recording on December the 8th, 2016.
Lucky. And congratulations to Trump being nominated and winning Time Magazine Person of the Year. I think, you know, all round, hey?
That's not an entirely unfair award, though, Person of the Year. I mean, I think...
Yeah.
Well, Hitler won it one year, didn't he?
Anyway, what we're going to talk about this week is a game that is so hot, it needs a bit of terraforming to get it to cool down a little bit. And, of course, we are talking Terraforming Mars. We will then lead into not just how we normally talk about spending your money, which is Kickstarter, but we're going to have someone who is an expert in retail.
About time.
And an expert in how to spend your money in a bricks and mortar game store. Nicole from our friendly local game store, Area 52.
Looking forward to that.
I know, she might also have some exciting news relating to a competition or something. And then Trent, you wanted to have a bit of a chat about racism and sexism
in
board gaming?
No, I didn't want to talk about it at all, but I'm being forced to. All that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Everywhere I go, people are asking me, Trent, what is your metal album of the year? Well, this isn't it, but this would be in my top five.
Right.
Black Crown Initiate. This is called Again. Black Crown Initiate with Again. Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. We're going to get into our Christmas Gamer's Guide in a moment, but foist, as we always do every week, it's time to talk about what we've been playing lately.
Mm.
Namely, Terraforming Mars from Swedish family company... Well, there's been some debate about how to pronounce it.
There has been.
Fricks Games?
Yes, it is Fricks Games, but the respective people involved, most notably Jacob or Jakob, which we haven't decided yet.
Jakob.
Frixelius, who is the designer.
Jakob.
Yeah.
Jakob.
So what I find very interesting, first of all, about the games company themselves is not only are they from Sweden, but...
Is that racist?
No. But they are...
Is it racist that I've just got the Swedish Chef theme music running through my head?
Well, I was going for the Frozen thing.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, they are a family of 10. 10 people in Sweden, and the company is made up of 4 brothers. And
oh, wow.
I just find that really cool because you've got Enoch, who is the CEO. You've got Jacob or Jakob, who is the game designer that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah,
you've got
cool.
Daniel, who is a game designer and an artist. And then you've got Jonathan, who is another game designer and also fiddles around on the interwebs.
I think they're from the north of Sweden where it's dark 6 months of the year as well.
Well, they would certainly get a lot of playtesting done, I would imagine.
So, Terraforming Mars. Do you remember the evil corporation choking the life out of the Martian colonies in Total Recall? Cutting off the air until Arnold Schwarzenegger ruined everything by making oxygen free?
Yes.
Coato.
Right? Well, get ready to say, screw that Schwarzenegger guy. I'm going to remake Mars how I want it. That's my understanding of how this game works. But, of course, I've not played it.
Yes, you have not. So maybe you just better sit back.
Okay.
And listen to our good friend Garth explain how this game works.
Yes. Well, let me take you back about a month or so to that very first and last and only Sunday on PAX when we were very lucky to sit down with good friend Alex.
Yes, from the TGDA.
Who managed to get into PAX nice and early, snaffle us the only copy of Terraforming Mars in the board game library. So thank you very much for that, Alex.
Because these copies are like scarce as hen's teeth.
These are even scarcer than hen's teeth. So maybe Nicole can give us a bit of an update on just how scarce hen's teeth actually are. But yes, to get you through... This game is all set in the 2400s, where Mars has been explored, but now it is time to actually turn it into that habitable planet, be able to more than likely squeak out every resource that you can, make sure that, you know, we just terraform this planet. And look, there are a whole bunch of giant corporations, not surprisingly, who want to get in on this planet, and each player... will play one of those corporations who are governed by the very creatively titled World Government on Earth.
So this is Disney, Apple, yes, Tyrell Corporation.
All of those. Now, basically, this is, first of all, where I like this game, because the game is going to be kind of cooperative, but also how much can I be the number one best corporation ever? Because for... I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but for the end of the game to trigger, three things must have happened on the planet that you're actually terraforming. First thing that needs to happen is that the temperature needs to have gone from minus 30 degrees, which we'll admit is a bit chilly, to 8 degrees, which is a normal Tasmanian summer.
I was going to say, obviously that's a hot summer's day in Sweden there.
Exactly right. The oxygen level needs to go from a quite inhibitive
3%, is it?
0%.
Zero.
Right. Up to 14% so that we can breathe every so often. And very much like in life, nine oceans need to be placed as well. So all of those things need to happen to trigger the end of game. And basically every player's turn is going to have some level of raising one of those levels, because this game is about hand management. This game is about resource gathering. This game is about tile placement. This game is also about card drafting, should you choose to play that variant. And it really brings together, in my opinion, very nicely, the thematic way that a terraforming planet could work in a board game environment.
So everyone's working towards those goals together, but it's a semi-co-op?
No. Basically, you're all working together to raise those levels, but ultimately you want to be the one who's either raised things the most or, more importantly, got the most victory points by doing the things that tie in with your corporation bonuses the most.
And the timing of that end game can be really tight, because, you know, you might need one more turn to finish on your grand scheme and someone else might notice that, so they go all out to maybe push that final parameter up what it needs to end the game, or vice versa. You could put it up, but you know, you hold it off because you think maybe you can do one more thing that will squeak you over or get one more of those goals, Garth.
Yeah, well, let's get to that, because what I want to do is sort of talk through the setup and then what possible actions you've got, because one of the things that makes this game a lot of fun is that every player is going to have a hell of a lot of potential options to do on each of their turns, or in each generation, as they call it. So the game starts with a very much a blank slate. You're looking at the planet Mars, which is a hexed-based planet, which has virtually nothing on it, apart from some areas where you'll only be able to place cities, and a lot of other areas where you'll only be able to place forests, and some other areas where you'll only be able to place oceans.
And ancient pyramids and faces that give you magical powers.
Yeah, of course, that must be a future expansion. So, everyone's going to start with 20 on the terraforming track. Now, the terraforming track is the scoring track for a lot of the points that you'll earn over the course of the game. But it also doubles as your income, because part of what you'll need to do, Trent, to terraform this planet is be able to afford to do things. Now, before the game's even started, you've got your 20, they call them mega credits in this game. But already you've got two possible options where the game starts. One is that it's the basic game. Now, we played the basic game because we were limited to time, and also because we wanted to be able to spend our time playing the game rather than reading the rule book. And the way the basic game starts is everyone starts with 42 mega credits and 10 cards that you have the option to buy. You don't have to buy them if you don't want to, but you can buy anywhere between 0 and all 10 of them at a cost of 3 mega credits each. And that's going to be a theme for the whole game because every time you will get cards, which will happen at the end of every generation, they're always going to cost you 3 mega credits to get into your hand. Now, there is the next level of this game, which is where every player is going to play a corporation. And the corporation, you start with a special corporation card, and each of them is different. They will have different amounts of starting money, they'll have some certain starting benefits or abilities that each player is going to have, and that just gives you a huge amount of replayability because there are about a dozen different corporations in that starting box.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Oh.
And I think I'm looking forward to playing that version because that gives you, we did look at some of those cards, yeah. That gives you a sort of a starting direction because already maybe I'm the Wayland Corporation and maybe I collect some extra titanium every round and so I'm going to go to
unobtainium.
All that, yes.
Yeah. Isn't that trademarked?
And so that's going to...
So is Wayland Corp, but yeah. Let's move on.
That's going to direct me in a particular direction, particularly at the start of the game, because that was the challenge I found, is you look at these cards and they're all, well, most of them fantastic, all that you do quite powerful stuff, but they're taking you off all in a whole bunch of different directions. And that, I guess, because it was the first game and we had really no idea... That was the constant struggle for me in this game was, I'm not really sure what I should do next because I've got all these options. But gradually, as we learned how things worked, we then knew, okay, these cards, I'm going to keep them because maybe I can use them next turn. This card, because of, say, the requirements or the cost or whatever, prerequisites, it's going to take me 3 turns to get to the place where I can put that down. Really, I should just sell that card because you can sell them for some
money.
Cash and just work on the cards that I know I'm going to be able to do this turn or next turn.
Yeah, exactly right.
But it did take a while to get to that stage.
It did. And look, one of the things I was going to mention towards the end of this is that it certainly is going to take you a round or two just to get the mechanics of it. And the reason for that is there are so many potential things that you can be doing on your go. Now, second part of starting this game is that everyone's going to get their own little player board, their own little tableau. We'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay.
But essentially, that's the individual board where you will be tracking the 6 resources in the game. So you've got your mega credits and the mega credit production. So how much income are you going to draw every generation? You've got the steel. You've got the titanium. You've got plants, which will be used to make forests. You've got your heat and your energy. And all of those things are going to be used as part of the actions that you'll be taking on any given turn. Now, what I want to first say is that how beautiful are the little cubes that you'll get to use
the gold, silver, for all the resources. Cubes are little metallic gold, silver, and bronze cubes are amazing. I mean, the plastic ones in the player colour are nice as well and a bit fiddly, and because they're light and they move around.
We'll
and
get to that.
That's something we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah. So anyway, everyone's got their little player board. Now, that's the setup. Everyone's ready to go. Everyone will have an income sort of 20. Everyone's going to start with one of every resource production on their board. And then you go. And the first player gets to start, as the first player often does, by doing 1 or 2 actions. And every player gets to choose whether they want to do 2 actions or whether they want to do 1 action. And this is not immediately apparent. Why would you want to just do 1 action when you can always do 2?
Yes.
But one of the things that is really important is about, remember how I said you want to raise the oxygen and you want to raise the temperature and you want to place oceans as part of triggering end of game? Well, there might be scenarios where you want to raise the temperature by 2. So you might spend both of your actions trying to do that. Or you might only raise it 1 so that it forces another player not to be able to raise the temperature or what have you, because there are certain milestone amounts where you'll get an immediate bonus by doing something. And that's where you want to really kind of figure out whether you want to do 1 or 2 actions. But anyway, what are those actions, Mark? Good question. First one is you can just simply play a card from your hand. Sounds pretty simple. There are going to be 3 different types of cards that you can play from your hand, different colors. You've got green cards, which are basically a one-shot, do this, get an immediate benefit.
Yep.
It might be get some resources, do some stuff. You've got the red cards, which are probably the most in-your-face cards, and that's usually ones that I might take resources from another player. Mark, you're going to have an asteroid fall on your settlement. Something to that effect. It's that game interaction with other players. And then you've got the blue cards. Now, the blue cards are, for me, dare I say it, the most interesting part of this, because they are the ones that will give you the ongoing ability or a passive ability that'll apply for the rest of the game. And certainly in the game we played, that's where I found I got a large percentage of my points.
Yes.
So they're the three cards that you can do. Now, this is immediately where the resources come into play, because you have to pay for those cards. You either pay for them in a cash amount, which is clearly listed on the cards, but some of them will also have the steel symbol or the titanium symbol, and you can choose to pay for that card with resources instead at a much better exchange rate. Because rather than paying $20, I might only have to pay 10 steel for a certain card.
Or 5 titanium.
Yeah, and you can chop and change and pay part with cash and part with the resources. I think that's really cool. Second action you can do is just take a standard action, which is clearly written on the board, and it's like your I can't really do much else kind of action, but I can do one of these half a dozen things, which might be place an ocean or a forest, build a city, raise a temperature. All of these things cost more than if you were able to do it through your own ability of a card.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I don't have the right card, or I'm a bit short on money, or something to that effect, let me do an action.
Yeah, and sometimes you're able to like trademark tap a card to then use a particular ability that a card gives you, and you know, do that once each round.
Exactly.
A lot of the ones where they were like biological cards where you were adding like microbes and things like that, and then you'd build up a stack of these microbes, and then you could turn them into like a forest or a creature or something like that. Yeah.
So that's the couple of things you can do. Two of the other really big ones are you can either claim a milestone or claim an award. Now, a milestone is I have been the first player to earn 35 on the terraforming track, which is the scoring and the income track. I claim that milestone and I'll get immediate points at the end of the game. There's half a dozen of those. Sorry, there's 5 of those in the game, but only 3 of them will ever trigger, which is good, again, for replayability.
Okay. Yeah, and the amazing thing about those is only one person can pick them. And, well, from what I saw, you are more likely to pick it before you hit the milestone, because if you don't, someone else is going to pick it and you'll totally miss out.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fascinating mechanic, that as well as
the awards.
At the end, which is a similar sort of thing, but for end game scoring. So there's a whole bunch of them, but only 3 of them will ever kick in. That award be at the end of the game, but then someone else might get the points for that.
Well, yeah, the award is I'm betting that I'm going to be the best at this by the end of the game, and you want to get in early to get it for less, but then someone else is going to try and screw you
over. And look, can I say, I love the look of this game. Mm. Like, in some ways to me, it had that 1970s sci-fi look.
Really? Because I looked at the cards to this and I thought it looked like Core Worlds.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
It's all know how good that was.
It reminded me of Core Worlds for sure. That 1970s sensibility of, hey, we've already been to the moon. We're going to be at Mars any day now. And I look now and Matt Damon's the only one that's been, and I mean, look at the trouble that got him into.
I suspect I'd really enjoy this.
You would, for sure.
But it also looks a little bit like a bog standard Euro again, though, because you might as well be farming ostriches or harvesting dental floss or mining chocolate.
And the fact
what's Marsy about it?
What's Marsy is the art. Like, the art is not at all like Core Worlds, because Core Worlds is, for the most part, it looks like the bottom of a coffee cup, the majority of the bits of art on Core Worlds. It's just, here's a sphere, it's slightly different brownie colour.
Yeah, no, true.
Whereas this is a lot more, you know, thematically interesting.
With the cards, you know, you've got all these different technologies and thematically it all fits together. Like, I'm going to generate all this heat from this comet that's going to plough into the surface of the Earth. But unfortunately, it's going to plow into Garth City, so it's going to destroy that. But hey, I'm going to get heat energy out of it.
So
there's lots of fun interactions between the cards. There's a great level of competition and interaction between players.
So if I want to buy a copy of this game, where do I get it?
Well, probably from Mars at the moment, because there's no copies available on Earth. So that's a real shame.
It's absolutely sold out, vanished in Australia. Can't get your hands on a copy of it.
Well, basically, this game only came out, maybe 6 months ago at best?
Just after Gen Con?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is already now number 26 in the overall ranking for BGG, number 14 in the strategy game heading for BGG. So this game has gone from nowhere It is.
Yeah, it's going to be. I reckon it's going to be top 10 within 12 months. That's for sure. Of all, like, of all time games.
So it will get reprinted, and look, I just hope it gets reprinted with better component quality.
I was going to say the player mats because of those little cubes, particularly the plastic ones sitting on. You really want the scythe type player mat with the little indentations that the cubes can sit in, because they're really light and flimsy, and you bump it and you go. Oh, did I have four titanium or 40,
yeah,
40
you're
titanium?
To keep track
I'm not really
of six,
sure.
Six different resources. Yeah, one sort of lazy bump.
But
the
that's
table.
Such a minor thing. Yeah. Everything else about this game is amazing, fantastic. It was my number one hit of PAX, and that included playing Lisboa.
Yeah, so look, if you can find a copy, sit down and play it. It'll only take you a round or two to figure out the basics of it, but repeat play will certainly be rewarded because there is so much variety. Like, all of the cards are unique. There's 140 unique cards with unique abilities, with unique art, plus a whole bunch of corporation cards. Just do yourself a favor.
Yep.
Try and find this game. Play it. It is so much fun.
Terraforming Mars. That's what the guys have been playing lately. I know that we have one retailer who's briefly had a copy of the game in her hot little hands. Vanished. Let's find out what else there is on the shelves. Area 52 is our friendly local game store, and we have Nicole, who's behind the jump to talk to us about all things Christmas and what you can buy for the gamer in your life. It's coming up next on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Bjork's History of Touches, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Man Cometh with Trent, Mark and Garth, and a special guest this evening.
We do have a special guest in the studio. Nicole, what should we call you? The purchasing manager, the games guru?
My official job title is game specialist.
Game specialist. You are in the right place, my dear, because you are with the Edge Man Cometh on Dice Radio.
Ooh.
How many times have I slipped that one in? Nicole, we're so excited to have you on here. Firstly, because you bought games with you.
I did.
Secondly, because you bought Thunderdome with you.
Oh, my God.
Hey, guys, why did the Hunter's hair look so good? Because he had some great moose. Anyway, we'll get back to that later. But, Nicole, it's such a busy time for you. We were talking last week when you got pallets and pallets and pallets of games in. It's Christmas, of course. Everyone wants to give games to Christmas, or at least they should. Tell us a little bit about life in your retail store at Christmas time, and then we want to hear about what are the hot things you've got for Christmas? What are you recommending that people pick up?
No problem. Well, look, I mean, we did have three pallets of games come in one day last week. So, I mean, my major life skill at the moment is Tetris. I'm really good at hitting everything on the shelves.
So pack and stack.
Pack and stack, and then hiding upstairs. But at the moment, I think I'm focusing a lot on party games. I'm finding that they're really hot selling over Christmas. People want to play games with their family. They want to give them gifts that they can play with them all year round, not just at Christmas. But Christmas is a really good opportunity because you're with your family or friends.
Yeah, you're with a big group of friends. And it's sort of like, hey, what do you want to do?
Exactly. So that's where we're sitting at the moment. We've got lots and lots of party games coming in. We sent out a catalogue for the first time in a little while, and that's been doing okay. Lots of people coming in and saying, tell me about this game, Mysterium. So that one's been really popular, Sheriff of Nottingham.
And I imagine you getting a question like that would be fantastic, because I'm imagining that the question you get mostly, well, actually, let's do a little bit of role play. Let's pretend that I'm a 50-year-old mother of two.
Okay.
Okay. I don't really understand my boys, but they spend a lot of time on this internet and they're on there all the time, and I would like a board game for them to maybe get them talking and out of their bedrooms. Do you have Monopoly?
Look, we have Monopoly, but unless you want to start an argument, let's go with something else.
Oh, but I played Monopoly when I was a kid and I loved it.
Look, I mean, you can go with Monopoly, but unless you follow the rules, the game tends to last quite a while. So I think I find that the best game to go for is probably something like a Carcassonne or a Catan.
Oh, I don't know what those are. Monopoly? Mousetrap?
Oh, look, Mousetrap,
Cluedo?
I'm afraid. Cluedo? Let's go Game of Thrones Cluedo.
My point is it difficult to convert your customers who aren't up to date on the hobby to try something new?
I actually find find that once they've come into the store and they've seen how big the board game section is, they find that they're quite overwhelmed. They go, oh, I didn't realize there were so many games. And they're actually...
Yeah. Do you have a copy of Monopoly?
We actually have a whole section of Monopoly. I'm not going to lie. But it's not our top-selling game. I mean, we have people come in, they look at the game section and they go, wow, okay, I'm interested in knowing what these games are about. I don't know what they are. Tell me about this one. What's this one here? Sushi Go... Love Letter. We've got lots of games at the moment.
Do you have any games of people from the 1450s looking out into the distance staring at you with dead eyes? Do you have those games?
Actually, there are some. They usually have something like Rail in the title.
See, that's Trent's favourite genre.
So what is your best-selling game normally? I mean,
it's probably a close tie between Cards Against Humanity and Catan.
Yeah.
Not Settlers of Catan anymore. They went modern.
Or Munchkin.
Munchkin's actually not that high up on the list. Sushi Go is probably, much higher than Munchkin at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And so Sushi Go, popular choice for Christmas. What else are we looking at in terms of new releases that are around at the moment that you're pushing?
Yeah, new releases for Christmas. We've got the new updated edition of 21B Baker Street. I just ran out, but I ordered some more, so there's more of that coming in. It was much more popular than I anticipated.
So that's like a light Sherlock Holmes game.
It's a very
game.
Light Sherlock Holmes game, and the board and the gameplay is a lot more crisp than it used to be in the 1980s version.
Thank
which
goodness
I have at
for
home.
That. Yeah, I've got a copy of that too.
The brown box.
I just wanted to kill it.
Yeah, I paid $8 for that one.
And there's even some, believe it or not, there's even some puns in the, like the clues.
You get over the puns,
No, I'm serious. So unlike Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, where it's all very logic, there's some like wordplay in the clues. Although you'd find nothing like, what's a vampire's least favourite lunch? A steak sandwich! Ba-boom! Well, I've got something to add to that. What did Austin Powers say to the bumblebees? Oh, beehive.
These are all from Punderdome, which...
If you love a Christmas cracker joke, they're definitely for you.
Yeah. Did you... You just brought this in to try and get rid of it.
I brought it in for mostly Mark. I know that he loves a good pun.
Hey, which musician can offer the most food? Jimmy Buffet. Oh, dear. Anyway, back to the retail talk.
Did Area 52 experience any kind of tabletop bounce this year? And I mean, the most recent season of Tabletop was released behind a paywall, and all the reports have been that the retailers who order, we all know what the upcoming games are on Tabletop on the next season in advance, but the reports have been that retailers didn't get the sales bump they were expecting. Was that the case?
Look, if I'm perfectly honest, when I heard about the paywall, I didn't order as many copies of those games as I would have.
There you go, Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Take that to the bank.
But I would also say something that does occur quite frequently is they play games on that program that we can't get in Australia. So often people come in and say, I saw this on Tabletop and I just can't get it for the store and I can't sell it to them. I'd love to, but sometimes it takes months and months, a year or two sometimes after they've played it on there and they've printed enough copies to send to Australia.
Yeah, well, I know they... Was it the first episode was Lanterns? Yep. Now, that was one that you had before because we were able to borrow a copy, which was very, very nice.
Lucky.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful little game. But, yeah, this whole paywall thing, I'm not too sure about. They released the first two episodes, is that right?
Yes, free on YouTube.
Yeah, but now we've got to get out some more money, which is not so good because I'm a tight ass.
I don't know that Will Wheaton needs the money.
No. However, now this is quite an appropriate one.
Oh, for God's sake.
Where did the newlywed dice go on their honeymoon? Paradise. Ba-dum, bum.
Isn't Coldplay playing tonight?
What about RPGs?
RPGs? Look, Dungeons & Dragons is definitely our top-selling one at the moment.
Really?
Yes, definitely. It booted Pathfinder well and truly into the distance. Yeah.
Oh, my God, really? Yeah,
great comeback from...
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, you hear the... Look, you read about it online, but then the actual... The results, the dollars and cents are there.
It's doing so well. I don't think we really anticipated how well it would be doing. I think everybody, when 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons Edition was out, that's what everyone was playing. People were like, it's very complicated. We want something simpler. So they threw out all the rules and started again with 4th edition, and nobody liked that.
Yeah.
No.
It was very restrictive. The rules just didn't quite work. It wasn't what people wanted. And so they actually listened to the fans, to their customer base, and then they went ahead and looked at 3.5, modified that rule set and made 5th edition based on changes that people wanted to see. So it's, the response has been really great with that one.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that that Wizards has done is really re-embrace the community.
They have, yeah.
Around the game. A large part of that is, of course, in the retail setting. And they offer various programs for retailers. Are you taking advantage of any of those?
Yeah, we do have a few things floating around. So we do actually run Dungeons & Dragons Encounters Wednesday nights. So people can come in, they just pay a $5 fee. But, I mean, if it's your first night, they're probably willing to waive it.
Yeah.
And then just sit down at a table and have a go at just a one-shot adventure just to see how you feel about Dungeons & Dragons. But something I would also mention was that... they've made the starter sets very affordable. They're $20, so you can have an adventure to start with at home as well.
And you don't need to go out and purchase the big, like, $40, $50 books
they're
straight up, do you?
They're actually $62.95 these days.
Wow.
Yeah. They're actually pretty dense books, though, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and look, and the great art, so people. Much in there. I was going to ask about Magic. So, I mean, yes. Magic is always been, you know, the crack of the gaming hobby.
That's correct.
But it's also, if you like, the what oils the retail wheels, and that it, people come in every time there's a new release and new boosters and a new, what do you call it? There's like a major release and then there's the minor releases and all those sort of things.
That's right.
And it just keeps the money ticking in, doesn't it?
Well, it's also, I mean, Magic is super popular, but I find that these days Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Weiss Schwartz, they've been really popular as well. Buddy Fight, we've got a lot of really strong communities in those games so that we have people coming in every night basically to play different games. They come in during the day if they've got time during school holidays. Work breaks, that sort of thing. So it's been really good. We've got all sorts of different trading card games going at the
People
moment.
Come in during work breaks.
Yeah, they do. Yes.
Fantastic.
They're hardcore.
Fantastic. I remember a little while ago you wanted to play Netrunner at lunchtime.
Yeah, I couldn't quite make it work.
But that was because the 14-year-olds kept beating you?
It was because Oren and I worked in different buildings and we had to go across town to organise it and book a room, and it became too complicated in a very short amount of time.
Now, Nicole, party games are all good and well, but what about me? What about this hardcore, heavy, like, player who's used to winning... like in-depth strategy games. What have you got for me?
Look, at the moment, I mean, I do have a few copies of C4 floating around if anyone is so far interested in that one.
Oh, yeah, wow. Garth. I tried. What? I pre-ordered this, and look, I'm so sorry, Nicole, but having read plenty of non-spoiler reviews, it's pretty clear that no one actually likes this game.
I know.
It's just fallen off a cliff, hasn't it?
I have to put it on sale and hope that someone buys it.
Six months ago, this was the most hotly anticipated game.
It's really beautiful.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
And then it's just hit a cliff and jumped off, and I've not heard of anyone who can finish this game, and that includes professional board game reviewers who basically say, we weren't having fun.
Look, as a retailer, I'd like to say that it's probably a good investment piece if you like beautiful board game art.
Nice comeback.
Is there anything else clogging up the shelves that you can't get rid of?
It's not that I can't get rid of.
What's really unpopular?
No, don't say that. I can't tell you that on the radio. I'd suggest Pandemic Legacy is one that I managed to get a bunch in this year. So, I mean, that one's awesome. And I know that you guys have been playing and talking about it.
Yeah, I think that's one where people will come to it late and say, oh, my friends have been playing it and they've told me all about it.
Mm.
And if it's like, oh, I can't find it anywhere, they'll sort of walk away with their tail between their legs. So that should be something. And then when the second season comes out, then people will obviously come in and say, I've heard about this. And you'll say, oh, well, you should try the first season first. And then they'll end up buying both copies.
I think Pandemic Legacy is a great one to play with the family, which is what I deliberately did. And I might not play with my family as often as I play with these losers over here.
Ah!
But it's that shared ongoing experience that you can have with your kids.
That's right. There's a few games floating around at the moment that I've been really impressed with. The cooperative games.
Okay.
You know, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, Time Story.
Yeah, which is an entirely new concept for the aforementioned 50-year-old mother of two who
they
doesn't understand
them.
Their kids. Yes. Yeah, it's like, oh my God, we can work together. We don't have to have a fight.
That's right. They go, well, we want to play a game. You know, with our kids, they're a bit young, what can we play? And I'm like, cooperative is always a good option because you're working with them, you're helping them through the game, and you're not trying to beat them and they're not trying to beat you. You're all winning or you're all losing at the same time.
We are talking with games specialist Nicole from Area 52, our friendly local game store here in Hobart. She's nice enough to drop in here to give us some Christmas gift buying tips on The Dice Man Cometh, and we're going to talk more. Shall we?
Fantastic. Look, I'd like to ask a few more questions.
Oh.
But particularly I'd like to ask, Trent, do you know, how do the smallest parts of your body communicate?
Short waves.
With a cell phone.
So much worse.
More champagne radio coming up in just a moment. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, the Dice Men cometh. We're almost out of here for show number 144. We have a competition, though, that we'd like to tell you all about in the lead up to Christmas. And, well, we've got some games to give away, don't we?
We will school people in the competition towards the end of the show. But speaking of school, what was Hercules' favourite subject in school? Mathematics.
Hey.
Oh boy.
Nicole, game specialist from Area 52. What kind of nerd are you exactly? I mean, because you're not just a chick in a game shop. You're a qualified archaeologist. Not everyone knows that. You're one half of a massively brainy, overachieving couple. Yep. The sorts of people who make everybody else feel inadequate, and you love being nerdy as well. So. I mean, are you a true gamer? What have you been playing lately?
Oh, God, look, if I'm honest, we've been running a hotel out of our house, having visitors for the last 5 weeks off the mainland. But that's okay. We've been playing a lot of party games.
Right.
We're just going to keep it light and it pretty quick. So we've been playing Sushi Go Party, which
love
is
that game.
Excellent. Excellent. It's a step up from Sushi Go, and it's an awesome way of playing with a bigger group of people. Quick to explain. And you can change it every time, which I love.
Actually, I was shopping for a present. This is not a pun. I was shopping for a present for my niece and nephew with the Schwartz, and he was giving me a few ideas. And I saw Sushi Go, and then I thought, no, I'm going to give them my copy of Sushi Go so then I can buy myself a copy of Sushi Go Party.
Oh, you're the worst kind of... Oh, that's,
no, he's
that's,
a shrewd shopper.
But that's, I did also...
Isn't that a sin? Don't
no,
you get a hell
no,
for
no.
that or something?
Oh, but I did also pick up, which I think is going to be perfect, and I'd never seen it before, Ticket to Ride First Journeys, which is like a kiddie version of Ticket to Ride. And a lot of people say, but Ticket to Ride, it's simple enough already. It just takes off those little slightly complex edges. I think it's ages six and up. It looks amazing as well.
It's beautiful. It's actually one of the most beautiful children's games I've had come in a while.
Yeah, there you go. And speaking of strange islands, Trent, what island has the tallest men? Long Island.
That was actually funny.
No, it wasn't.
Are we going to give away this copy of Pundonome so I don't have to ever have to see it again?
Actually, I think you'll find we'll be giving away a fresh sealed copy of Pundonome.
Oh, wow.
A nice change.
There we
yeah.
go.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, should we get to this competition so that, you know, we don't have to listen to Mark say some puns like, which murderer has the best real estate? Charles Manson.
All right. So what are we calling this competition?
This competition. Now, we thought about this long and hard.
Yeah, we came up with a few names.
Yeah. Now, Mark, I don't know if you can read my handwriting, but certainly can't. So the heading for this particular competition is there ain't no party like a party games party competition. Because Nicole and Area 52 have been very generous in giving us four games. Is that right?
That's correct.
Wonderful. Now, would you like to talk us through those games quickly, Nicole?
Of course. Look, we're aware of Pundonome.
Pundonome is awesome. Because...
I should say that we're sufficiently aware, Garth.
Aware.
Shut up. Let's move on.
Well, as well as that, we're giving away a freshly sealed copy of Sushi Go Party.
That's awesome. This is awesome. Still the game that my kids will go to. Every single day.
It's excellent. Yes. And we're also giving away one we haven't mentioned yet, Sheriff of Nottingham, which is an awesome game. So fun.
Yeah. Oh, well, so we've fun. Covered that on the show
yes,
previously.
We have, yeah.
Great fun.
Yeah,
great
it's
fun.
Great fun. And we're also giving away a copy of a Kickstarter that actually just arrived in store this week that we backed called Lil Cthulhu.
Oh, what's that? I haven't heard about it.
It's actually a very cute little card game where you are all cultists and Cthulhu's gone away for the day, so you're babysitting his little Cthulhu. Now, he's a bit of a monster. Throws a few tantrums, so you've got some sanity points that you may be losing if he throws a tantrum and you can't get the right toy to him in time. So you're just trying to feed him toys just to keep him happy, but he is never happy for very long. So you're constantly losing your sanity.
And we will all die, sort of in typical Cthulhu fashion?
Look, you don't die necessarily, but you do go insane.
Well, that's... Well, I'd hope so.
That's a benefit of a Cthulhu game.
It's a babysitting game.
Yeah. So, look, thank you very much.
Thank
that is
you.
Awesome.
Yes.
And thank
no
you to
problem.
Area 52 for those four games. Now... what do people have to do to actually enter this competition?
I don't know. You guys are making it up. It was something to do with... it was something to do with what I was wearing earlier.
Exactly, which is clothes, so it's a nice change. Thank you very much for that. So the way it's going to work is that we are going to make something Christmassy on our website, aren't we, Mark?
Yes.
That will allow you to click on that something so that you can enter this competition and win one of these four lovely games donated by Area 52.
I bought one of those ugly Christmas jumpers. But it's not just any ugly Christmas jumper. It's the coolest ugly Christmas jumper I could find.
Yes.
And, it just arrived today. And even though it's like 24 degrees today in Slobart, I'm just wearing it anyway. I got a Gremlins Christmas.
Don't give it away, Trent, because what everyone has to do is jump onto the dicemencometh.com website
to see it in all its magnificence.
Yeah. Yes. And it'll be tucked away somewhere. The link will all be up by the time this podcast goes to air, hopefully. So that'll be fine. And
for those people who click on the link and it doesn't work, because I know there were a couple of you last time, probably those really nerdy people using like Opera or, you know, some other strange internet browser because you can, then send us an email anyway, because you'll be the sort of person that looks into the code and can see what you need to tell us. You know who you are.
There ain't no party like a Diceman Cometh Christmas game party. I've just gotten the title of the competition wrong.
That's all right. No sleep till Christmas.
All right. So, look, just before we all go, speaking of online shenanigans, do we want to talk about the flame war that I got into a couple of nights ago?
Do we have time?
Yes. Do you know why? Because, Trent, what happens when you run into a window? You feel the pain. And is that what you felt during this particular session of Flame Wars?
Okay, so, Dakole, are you up on this?
Look, if I'm honest.
No. We played Zolkin last week. I won.
I saw that too.
All right, which was a feat in itself. And to celebrate, I put a bag on my head.
I didn't see that.
And recreated the box cover. And I was accused of mocking the living Mayan culture at 11:30 on a Thursday night.
And look, the real truth was, as we said, hey, let's take a photo posed like the board art, the box art, because you happen to have one of those crystal skulls that comes with, is it vodka?
The crystal head vodka, that's it. Yeah.
You had that. You held that up. And I said, oh, you need a hat. And the only hats that were in the man cave were a German World War II helmet, which could have got us in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, we decided not to go with that option. Yeah.
Or the Tabletop Game Designers Association of Australia show bag from PAX. And we thought, hey, that'd be funny. Put that on your head. You know, a sly little shout out to TGDA. Oh, boy.
You know, I think what's happened is that Trump's victory has made the left a little bit twitchy. I think.
Okay. Yeah.
And just people are very ready to be offended by things. Look, you know what? I don't even really want to go into it right now, except to say that if anybody did get offended by my use of a TGDA bag on my head to recreate a board game cover, I would like to apologize and sincerely like to apologize to all of our Mayan listeners who I know are downloading the show from somewhere in Central America.
Correct,
I assume. Really,
keep digging, Trent. Keep digging.
They could be anywhere. I mean, who knows? You know, I'm sure there's flights to and I'll stop talking.
Okay. Well, how did the director get by when he broke his leg? He used the cast. Anyway.
I don't think this has been one of our better shows, Nicole, but it's been a pleasure having you here, and thank you very much for offering those games.
Thank you for having me, and you're very welcome.
How long will the competition be open for?
This competition will be going for the month of December, so we'll be able to give everyone a nice late Christmas present.
Yeah, New Year's parties.
All right, so that is The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM for another week. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you so much, Nicole, and bye.
Bye.
You got time for one more pun.
Oh, have we? I might be able to find a good one. Now you told me, I've just packed them all away.
A good one?
What time... No. People will know that one. What's a cat? No. What did the ocean call the sand after a fight?
a total beach.
Night, everyone. Bye. This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.